Chapter 60. The Humvee came back from the flight line, and the two PFCs got out and nodded to Reacher like nothing was wrong. Reacher said, "I was supposed to be on that plane." The driver said,
"No, sir. Mr. Thurman told us you had a one-way ticket tonight. He told us you were heading south from here on business of your own. He told us you were all done in Colorado."
Reacher said, "Shit." He thought back to Thurman in front of the airplane barn, the deliberate pause, debate in his face, some kind of a long-range calculus, like he was playing a long game, thinking 8 moves ahead. "Fly with me tonight. I won't ask you to join me for dinner." Reacher shook his head. He was 90 minutes flying time from where he needed to be, in the middle of the night, in the middle of nowhere, with no airplane. Outwitted by a 70-year-old preacher. Dumb and tense. I think they were all stirred up because they're heading for the end of something. What? He had no idea. When? He had no clue. He checked the map in his head. There were no highways in the Oklahoma Panhandle. None at all. Just a thin, red tracery of state 4 lanes and county 2 lanes. He glanced at the Humvee and at the PFCs and said, "You guys want to drive me out to a road?"
"Which road?"
"Any road that gets traffic more than once an hour."
"You could try 287, that goes south."
"I need to go north, back to Colorado. Thurman wasn't entirely frank with you."
"287 goes north, too, all the way up to I-70.
"How far is that?"
"Sir, I believe it's dead on 200 miles.
Hitchhiking had gotten more and more difficult in the 10 years since Reacher left the Army. Drivers were less generous, more afraid. The West was sometimes better than the East, which helped. Day was always better than night, which didn't. The Humvee from Fort Shaw let him out at 12:45. And it was 1:15 in the morning before he saw his first northbound vehicle, a Ford F-150 that didn't even slow down to take a look. It just blew past. 10 minutes later, an old Chevy Blazer did the same thing. Reacher blamed the movies. They made people scared of strangers. Although in reality, most movies had the passing strangers messed up by the locals, not the other way around. Weird, inbred families that hunted people for sport. But mostly Reacher blamed himself. He knew he was no kind of an attractive roadside proposition. "Look at yourself. What do you see?" Maria from San Diego was the kind of person that got rides easily. Sweet, small, unthreatening, needy. Vaughn would do okay, too. Hulks 6'5" in height were a riskier bet. At 2:10, a dark Toyota pickup at least slowed and took a look before passing by, which was progress of a sort. 2:05, a 20-year-old Cadillac swept past. It had an out-of-tune motor and a collapsed rear suspension, and an old woman low down behind the wheel. White hair, thin neck, what Reacher privately called a Q-tip, not a likely prospect. Then at 2:15, an old Suburban heaved into view. In Reacher's experience, new Suburbans were driven by uptight assholes, but old models were plain utilitarian vehicles, often driven by plain utilitarian people. Their bulk often implied a kind of no-nonsense self-confidence on the part of their owners, the kind of self-confidence that said strangers weren't necessarily a problem. The best hope so far. Reacher stepped off the shoulder and put one foot in the traffic lane, cocked his thumb in a way that suggested need but not desperation. The Suburban's brights came on. It slowed. It stopped altogether 15 feet short of where Reacher was standing. A smart move. It gave the guy behind the wheel a chance to look over his potential passenger without the kind of social pressure that face-to-face proximity would imply. Reacher couldn't see the driver. Too much dazzle from the headlights. A decision was made. The headlights died back to low beam, and the truck rolled forward and stopped again. The window came down. The driver was a fat, red-faced man. He was clinging to the wheel like he would fall out of his chair if he didn't. He said,
"Where are you headed?"
His voice was slurred. Reacher said, "North into Colorado. I'm trying to get to a place called Hope."
"Never heard of it."
"Me neither, till a few days ago."
"How far away?"
"Maybe 4 hours."
"Is it on the way to Denver?"
"It would be a slight detour."
"Are you an honest man?"
Reacher said, "Usually."
"Are you a good driver?"
"Not really."
"Are you drunk?"
"Not even a little bit."
"Well, I am. A lot." "So you drive to wherever it is you want to go. Keep me out of trouble. Let me sleep it off and then point me toward Denver, okay?"
"Deal." Hitchhiking usually carried with it the promise of random personal encounters and conversations made more intense by the certainty that their durations would necessarily be limited. Not this time. The florid guy heaved himself over into the passenger seat and collapsed its back against a worn mechanism and went straight to sleep without another word. He snored and bubbled far back in his throat, and he thrashed restlessly. According to the smell of his breath, he had been drinking bourbon all evening. A lot of bourbon. Probably with bourbon chasers. He was still going to be illegal when he woke up in 4 hours' time and pressed on to Denver. Not Reacher's problem. The Suburban was old and worn and grimy. Its total elapsed mileage was displayed in the window below the center of the speedometer in LED figures like a cheap watch. A lot of figures, starting with a 2. The motor wasn't in great shape. It still had power, but it had a lot of weight to haul, and it didn't want to go much faster than 60 miles an hour. There was a cell phone on the center console. It was switched off. Reacher glanced at his sleeping passenger and switched it on. It wouldn't spark up. No charge in the battery. There was a charger plugged into the cigarette lighter. Reacher steered with his knees and traced the free end of the wire and shoved it into a hole on the bottom of the phone. Tried to switch again. The phone came on with a tinkly little tune. The sleeping guy just snored on. The phone showed no service. The middle of nowhere. The road narrowed from 4 lanes to 2. Reacher drove on. 5 miles ahead, he could see a pair of red taillights, small lights set low, widely spaced, moving north a little slower than the Suburban. The speed differential was maybe 5 miles an hour, which meant it took 60 whole minutes to close the gap. The lights were on a U-Haul truck. It was cruising at about 55. When Reacher came up behind it, it sped up to a steady 60. Reacher pulled out and tried to pass, but the Suburban wouldn't accelerate. It bogged down at about 62, which would have put Reacher on the wrong side of the road for a long, long time, maybe forever. So he eased off and tucked in behind the truck and battled the frustration of having to drive just a little slower than he wanted to. The cell phone was still showing no service. There was nothing to see behind, nothing to see to the sides. The world was dark and empty. 30 feet ahead, the U-Haul's back panel was lit up bright by the Suburban's headlights. It was like a rolling billboard, an advertisement. It had a picture of 3 trucks parked side by side at an angle, small, medium, and large. Each was shown in U-Haul's distinctive orange and white colors. Each had U-Haul painted on its front. Each promised an automatic transmission, a gentle ride, a low deck, air conditioning, and cloth seats. A price of $19.95 was advertised in large figures. Reacher eased the Suburban closer to check the fine print. The bargain price was for in-town use of a small truck for 1 day, mileage extra, subject to contract terms. Reacher eased off again and fell back. U-Haul. U-Haul. We don't. Independence. Self-reliance. Initiative. In general, Reacher didn't care for the corruption of written language. You for you, EZ for easy, HI for high, LO for low. He had spent many years in school learning to read and spell, and he wanted to feel that there had been some point to it. But he couldn't get too worked up about U-Haul. What was the alternative? Self-drive trucks? Too clunky. Too generic. No kind of a catchy business name. He followed 30 feet behind the bright rolling billboard, and the triple U-Haul logos blurred together and filled his field of view. The letter U for Y-O-U. Then he thought, Y-O-U for the letter U. You did this to me. To assume makes an ass out of you and me. He checked the phone again. No signal. They were in the middle of the Comanche National grassland, like being way out at sea. The closest cell tower was probably in Lamar, which was about an hour ahead. The drunk guy slept noisily, and Reacher followed the wallowing U-Haul truck for 60 solid minutes. Lamar showed up ahead as a faint glow on the horizon, probably not more than a couple of streetlights, but in contrast to the black grassland all around, it felt like a destination. There was a small municipal airfield to the west, and there was cell coverage. Reacher glanced down and saw two bars showing on the phone's signal strength meter. He dialed Vaughn's home number from memory. No answer. He clicked off and dialed information, asked for the Hope PD, let the phone company connect him. He figured his sleeping passenger could spring for the convenience. He heard the ringtone, and then there was a click and more ringtone. Automatic call forwarding, he guessed. The Hope PD building wasn't manned at night. Vaughn had mentioned a day guy, but no night guy. Incoming calls would be rerouted out straight to the nighttime prowl car, to a cell provided by the department or to a personal cell. 10 nights out of 14 it would be Vaughn answering, but not tonight. She was off duty. It would be another officer out there chasing gum wrappers, maybe a deputy. A voice in his ear said, "Hope PD," Reacher said. "I need to talk to Officer Vaughn." The guy in the passenger seat stirred but didn't wake up. The voice in Reacher's ear said, "Officer Vaughn is off duty tonight." "I know, but I need her cell number." "I can't give that to you." "Then call it yourself and ask her to call me back on this number." "I might wake her." "You won't." Silence. Reacher said, "This is important. And be quick, I'll be heading out of range in a minute." He clicked off. The town of Lamar loomed up ahead. Low, dark buildings, a tall water tower, a lit-up gas station. The U-Haul pulled off for fuel. Reacher checked the Suburban's gauge. Half full. A big tank. But a thirsty motor and many miles to go. He followed the U-Haul to the pumps, unplugged the phone. It showed decent battery and marginal reception. He put it in his shirt pocket. The pumps were operational, but the pay booth was closed up and dark. The guy from the U-Haul poked a credit card into a slot on the pump and pulled it out again. Reacher used his ATM card and did the same thing. The pump started up, and Reacher selected regular unleaded and watched in horror as the numbers flicked around. Gas was expensive. That was for damn sure. More than $3 for a gallon. The last time he had filled the car, the price had been $1. He nodded to the U-Haul guy, who nodded back. The U-Haul guy was a youngish, well-built man with long hair. He was wearing a tight, black, short-sleeved shirt with a clerical collar. Some kind of a minister of religion. Probably played the guitar. The phone rang in Reacher's pocket. He left the nozzle wedged in the filler neck and turned away and answered. The Hope cop said, "Vaughn didn't pick up her cell." Reacher said, "Try your radio. She's out in the watch commander's car." "Where?" "I'm not sure." "Why is she out in the watch commander's car?" "Long story." "You're the guy she's been hanging with? Just call her."
She's married, you know.
I know. Now call her.
The guy stayed on the line, and Reacher heard him get on the radio. A call sign, a code, a request for an immediate response, all repeated once, and then again. Then the sound of dead air. Buzzing, crackling, the heterodyne whine of nighttime interference from high in the ionosphere. Plenty of random noise, but nothing else. No reply from Vaughn.